Such a gorgeous day, and such a gorgeous place to be buried. Yeah, if you've gotta be buried. That's my dad. That's my mom. And they're at it again, each other's throat. God damn it, Faye, can't you leave it? My dad says through his teeth. Can't you just leave it even now? I mean, he's doing it as bad as she is. It never used to be like this. I've always considered us a lovely family. That's what my grandma always says. Angie, yours is a lovely family. But, but, yeah, that's my grandma. But my dad's been really weird since coming to the Yucatan to kill vampires, and my mom's been really weird, maybe always, but especially since seeing that naked guy in Merida, and now they're both weird squared, and I'm thinking we're on our way to divorce court. Why can't grown-ups just grow up? I look out at the ocean. We're standing on the cliffs by the little cemetery in Santa Cruz de Cu, and the ocean is so beautiful, it looks like out of a beer commercial. Pale blue. You've never seen water like they've got in the Yucatan. And white beaches. But the sun. God. It's Sunday. And we're at Jose Luis's funeral along with everybody in Mexico else. I mean, Santa Cruz de Cu is this little town on the edge of nowhere, and Jose Luis is this little boy, so like how many friends can he have already? So then who the hell are all these people? And boring? Old Cu is presiding over the ritual, and he's doing everything like five times, then taking two steps backward and turning in circles and doing it all over again. And everything's in Maya, and Cu is muttering under his breath so you can't understand anything. But all these people are stuck stone still and breathless. Jose Luis is on this table set up on this mound near the open grave, and he's decked out like a rich boy. I mean, where did Bincha come up with the money for this? None of these people have any money. They're all farmers and make hammocks out of henequen and little dolls and cloth and junk to sell in the market in Merida. I mean, I'm looking around this little village cemetery at all these ornate monuments and tombstones and decorations, and I'm thinking, these people get into death in a big way. I remember when we stopped in Guanajuato on the way down to the Yucatan, and my mom's looking at the guidebook, and she goes, oh, how interesting. They've got a mummy museum here. And so we've all got to go see these mummies. I mean, a whole museum with nothing but mummies in it, like hundreds of them. My mom and dad are like, ooh, right in the face of these mummies, and they corner the guide. My dad trying to get him to explain just what minerals and just what salts in the soils of Guanajuato account for this mummification. And my mom trying to get him to explain again just why these bodies were dug up to begin with. And get this, the families didn't keep up their installment payments on the graves, so the mummies were evicted. And then their poor little dried-up bodies were brought to this museum and put in glass cases for tourists, for entry fees, and all of them with their mouths, every one of them, wide open like they died screaming. So real-looking, yet so unreal, yet so real. Dead. Some of them had boots on, and nothing else. All the clothes rotted off so that you could see the remains of their pubic hair, even. This one man, you could even see the foreskin on his penis, like wrinkled leather. Most of the mummies, though, were not men, but women, which tells you something about how much they value their women in that town. They don't even make the payments on their graves. In this one glass case were these twin little girls, still with their party dresses on, leaning up against each other, one's eyes closed and the other's eyes just gone, just open, empty, and their mouths pulled back like they died crying for their mommy and stayed preserved like that forever. I didn't want my mom and dad to see me crying, so I got away over to this corner where there was this upright coffin with a woman inside who looked from the size of her stomach like she had died pregnant and screaming. I talked with her for quite a while and gave her the name Silencia, which I thought she would appreciate. I told her that I knew her soul was at peace in spite of the fact that her body was eternally screaming right here for everyone to watch. Just then this flash went off, and I turned to see that this Mexicanito tourist had taken my picture with Silencia. I was so surprised and mortified that I started screaming, too. I mean, what kind of ghoul would want a picture of this gringa teenager with a mummy? See, I have this problem with screaming. When my mind gets, like, blown out of my head, I start screaming and can't stop. I don't remember my mom getting me out of the mummy museum, but I do know that my dad managed to buy the roll of film from the Mexicanito tourist for a lot of money, taking his address and promising to send him the other pictures when they were developed, but not the one of me. When those pictures came back, you bet I was the first to open the envelope because I wanted to see that picture. Turns out the guy is a horrible photographer, and he cut me off right down the center with my mouth dropped open in surprise. But there was Silencia screaming, but looking kind of beautiful in an awful way. I decided to keep the picture forever. Now at Jose Luis's funeral, as I'm remembering that photograph, I realize how poor Bincha looks like Silencia, standing next to Jose Luis's body, looking down into his face, her mouth wide open in silent pain as she presses a handkerchief against it. It's so terrible to watch her, so as terrible to watch her now as it was when my dad and mom brought her back to Santa Cruz de Cu with poor dead little Jose Luis clutched to her chest. Then she wasn't silent, but screaming out loud and tearing her hair and clawing at her face. I mean, I never saw emotions like this so out of her head and out of her body. I mean, this was the first time. This is when I first knew for sure how bad life sucks. But this day in the cemetery, Beach is like petrified ash, like the mummies. I can't even watch her because she makes me hurt so bad inside. And I can't watch Jose Luis because he was such a sweet kid, and now his body's lying there empty of him, and his face is like a polished stone mask, and the worms and bugs are going to be eating him. And I can't watch my mom and dad because they're being so jerky, and I can't stand watching Koo. So I turn my head out to the ocean, over to Cabeza del Perro, the point of land up behind our house. It looks from here exactly like a dog's head, which I guess is why they call it Cabeza del Perro, which is Spanish for head of the dog. I'd like to go sit between the dog's ears and watch the ocean all around and listen to the wind. From there, because of the way the point juts north out into the bay, you can see the sun both rise and set over the water. Cabeza del Perro. That's where I'd like to be, but I'm standing instead in this circle of people with the sun getting hotter and hotter, beating down on my black dress and black hat, and I start to get dizzy and my sweat drips into my eyes, burning them. I shake my head and my eyes rattle, and the sweat goes whipping off my face. Through the sweat, I can see Orlando over on the other side of Jose Luis, where he's lying on the table. And Orlando's making these eyes at me, the way Mexican men do. If you ever go to Mexico, you'll know what I mean. And I'm trying to pretend like I don't see, because it's not right for poor Jose Luis that Orlando's over there flirting with me over his dead body. But Orlando's so cute that it breaks me up just thinking about it. So I look back at Cabeza del Perro and try not to laugh. But this big laugh just escapes right out of my mouth. I mean, It's like a snort. Because as soon as I feel it start to come out, I clamp my teeth together, which forces it through my nose. So this is even worse because I blow snot right onto the ground. So I put my head down and start feeling in my pockets for a handkerchief. I mean, I am mortified, laughing and blowing snot at Jose Luis's funeral. So this makes me laugh again. Another snort. I bite my lip so hard that I can taste blood, and I put my hand over my mouth to hide it, but I can't stop laughing. So I put my other hand up to cover all over my face, and my dad thinks I'm crying for Jose Luis. So he puts his arm around my shoulder and says, he says, "It's okay, Angel." He's in heaven now. And this laugh sends me into convulsions. And I start laughing right out of my gut, which gets me all choked up and heaving until suddenly I think I'm going to die right here and now. And they're going to have to bury me in the same grave with Jose Luis. Which makes me snort again. So that now I can't get my breath. And it starts to hurt inside my chest. And I suddenly realize that this is serious stuff. And that I may give myself a heart attack. I can feel the blood pounding in my temples. And this is God striking me dead for laughing at Jose Luis's funeral. These black spirals start spinning in front of my eyes. And in the center of the spirals, I see Ku looking at me. He leans down, picks up the shovel, walks straight at me. Then when he gets on the mound side by side with Jose Luis's body, he stops, turns to the people all around and shouts, "Dios protegenos del vampiro," swings the shovel back over his shoulder, over his head, around and down, and whack, and then again whack, and then again whack, and then again whack, until splat. Jose Luis's head falls on the ground and comes rolling down the mound right at me, right at me. Right at me.
Angie screamed the entire climb up the hill from the cemetery to the house, a piercing, hysterical scream that drilled into my head. I took her out of Mark's arms, and he gave her over to me easily. You will think me ineffectual and maternally resourceless, but I could find no words to comfort or calm her. I suppose that doesn't matter anymore, but it has always mattered. Angie is my baby. A mother takes care of her baby. First, last, a mother takes care of her baby. "Shh, baby, shh," I said to her. I said other things like, "It's okay," ineffectual, maternally resourceless things. I brushed the hair back from her sweating forehead and kissed it, knowing that inside that skull was etched forever the image of the human horror out in the cemetery. The people's faces, not horrified, but set and grim, enduring the hacking of the shovel on that little neck without so much as a wince among them. Except Beancha, of course. The mother watching her baby mutilated. Beancha was indescribable. "Everything will be all right," I kept saying aloud to Angie, as I kept asking myself how anything could be right ever again when a society stands by and watches its priest hack off the head of their precious little boy. I had to pull Angie forcibly away from Jose Luis's head as she screamed into his face. I had to drag her up the hill and into the house. She kept trying to push me away from her. Where was Mark? I kept thinking.